Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Dispensing cannabis business knowledge beyond a million square feet of cultivation space, CannabisRadio.com proudly presents Blunt Business, harvested by Strainwise Consulting. Together, we will navigate the challenges and opportunities of one of the most profitable industries on earth. Join us each episode to hear our weekly roundtables and interviews with industry professionals. Now, let's delve into some Blunt Business with your host.
Thanks for checking on in for another edition of Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Thank you again for joining us as you always do. It's not a cliche. It's meant to be sincere. My next guest is a serial entrepreneur and leader in the tech, lifestyle, and beverage alcohol industries who has redefined how the beverage alcohol industry connects with consumers online. He has consulted with the likes of AB InBev, Pernod Ricard, Universal Music Group, Tesco, Diego, BevMo, and 7-Eleven. My guest today is the CEO of MJ. That's spelled E-M-J-A-Y. Chris Vaughn is joining us here on Blunt Business. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. MJ is a vertically integrated cannabis retail and delivery company that, thanks to a merger with Saucy last October, has existing access to 22 U.S. markets for alcohol deliveries and a robust on-demand cannabis delivery service throughout Southern California. Warren Bobro, over in our Days and Infused series, has been featured there on Forbes. Spoke with you in one of his regular Q&A columns, explaining MJ as, quote, helping destigmatize cannabis distribution by disrupting the traditional supply chain in the cannabis industry. So expand on that destigmatization and disruption for me, as Warren described.
Sure. Well, you know, I think anytime you're bringing a formerly illegal industry into the legal world, there's obviously a lot of stigma around it. Even in alcohol today, which has been legal for, you know, almost a century, it's there's still stigma around, you know, liquor stores and how people consume. And you know, we see it in the alcohol industry, but we definitely see it in cannabis. You know, if you think about just the average customer, how they maybe walk into any type of retail store, they're not used to the cannabis shopping experience today of checking in with security, turning over your driver's license at the door, all the security measures that may take place just to shop for the products. And so I think in many ways, the view of this industry, as well as the operators in the industry from your typical consumer, is not terribly favorable, or at least has a bunch of opinions. And we're trying to professionalize the way that people can shop for the product and show them that it's probably a better experience than even having your food delivered by a Postmates or an Uber Eats, where, you know, a couple times a month they maybe steal your meal or whatever it may be. How do we show terrific customer service and in many ways destigmatize the industry from that perspective?
You told Forbes this during that same article, quote, just 7 years ago, the largest alcohol companies in the world had almost no involvement in online shopping or last mile delivery. We built one of the largest bev alcohol marketplaces in the country. And through that journey, cannabis has been increasingly on my radar for the past 3 to 4 years. So you brought yourself into this space, forward thinking the thought of delivery before even the pandemic even came into play. And also seeing what other markets are out there in terms of the rideshare market that's also trying to offer delivery in that same vein, and also seeing other apps, any kind of app that would come in for delivery in the same kind of idea. So talk to me about the similarities that you see from the alcohol and beverage industry that your team is looking to leverage now in cannabis.
Sure. There's a lot. I'll try and segment it into a couple different groups.
Sure.
One is from a regulatory perspective, I think starting with regulation and starting with working with regulators to make sure that you are helping move an industry forward as opposed to just winging it and having issues. So very similar approach, both in alcohol and in cannabis. Before we even started Saucy, you know, we sat down and met with the regulatory bodies and said, what are, you know, this is what we want to do. How can we do it not only compliantly, but what are other issues you may have, you know, a lot of cash under the table in the industry, underage drinking, whatever it may be, and how do we build tools that helps you solve for these problems as well? You know, required ID verification on every single order. I don't know a retailer in the country that does that. Every single transaction is done via credit card. So, and record and make sure that all the retailers are paying taxes properly. So our approach to alcohol, I think, was very thoughtful. We saw some food delivery players early on just turn on alcohol delivery, not speak with regulators, not do payment processing properly, not do other things properly, and they got shut down and then had to go back and be thoughtful about it. So I think we've always taken a very thoughtful approach to how we work with regulated markets. Even in certain states in the country, alcohol delivery, you know, the laws that haven't changed in 80 years are starting to change very quickly. So that could be states like Georgia, Virginia, Texas, where they're starting to recognize that people shop for the majority of things in their life online, and that alcohol should be no different. And when we got started 7-8 years ago, there really wasn't an e-commerce for alcohol. There was wine.com. You could ship it around the country, but outside of wine, you really couldn't do much. And so we dove into that head first and worked, I think, with the regulators to figure it out. In cannabis, you know, I'd say a couple of years into Saucy, we started seeing customers ask, hey, can, you know, cannabis is becoming legal or is legal. Would you guys consider offering it? And at the time, you know, we said, no, you can't offer it on Saucy. It can't be, you can't order alcohol and cannabis together. But it was an interesting notion from customers that, why can't I have, you know, cannabis delivered? And I think we started to go to community meetings that were happening about cannabis and heard a lot of the same issues where local communities that maybe have too many liquor stores today and they're trying to get, you know, a few liquor stores pulled out of their city, yeah, are very concerned that now cannabis is legal. And wait a minute, I think there's 45,000 liquor stores in the country. I don't want to, you know, be trying to get rid of some of those and then turn around and all of a sudden they're all pot shops, right? So similar concerns, not necessarily even targeted just at cannabis, but just wanting to make sure that the brick and mortar landscape didn't turn into something where you go down the street and every single corner is a cannabis shop. And so we heard that. And
that's interesting because New York City, when you're looking at the legalization passing there, their idea is they want to be able to have cannabis available, the residents there, but they wouldn't necessarily want the shops, you know, scattered around, correct, their neighborhoods, which is some of the basis we've seen on some of the surveys and polling that we had from a guest we had on recently. I want to ask you real quickly, because you're mentioning Saucy a couple of times, and I want to make sure of the fact that Saucy was merged with MJ in October 20 of last year. MJ originally was founded in 2019, started specifically in the Los Angeles area, and then now you added to those extra markets. What I want to ask you real quick is, before we go to break, talk to me about the merger and how the expansion from one of the second largest market in the country to going to 22 markets around the whole, one of the largest states in the country.
Sure. So we've been operating Saucy for close to 8 years now. And we started at the end of 2013, launched in early 2014. Today it serves a little over 400 cities around the country, doing beer, wine, spirits, snacks, mixers, and other products, convenience driven products. And, you know, has grown tremendously over the past few years, but obviously had a big standout year in 2020. MJ, yeah, started in, call it 2019, really got going in January of 2020, and is a vertical operator, so different than Saucy, that partners with existing liquor stores and their licenses and makes their inventory available online for customers to shop. MJ owns and operates its own licenses and retail locations, owns all that product, has some holdings in cultivation and real estate in the industry as well. But our footprint today is we operate all of Greater Los Angeles. We also have a retail storefront. And then in San Diego, we have a retail storefront, MJ store, that also operates delivery. And I think that our approach in cannabis is, you know, you typically see people that are only retailers or only delivery services, and we see tremendous benefit in having an omni-channel presence for the customer, where we are just serving more of their needs or more of their purchase occasions with that model.
I want to ask you about some comments made recently. The CEO of Uber, Dara Khosrowshahi, actually said they won't risk. They're actually interested in, once legalization is allowed, Uber wants to be able to go and deliver cannabis. Quote, when the road is clear for cannabis, when federal laws come into play, we're absolutely going to take a look at it. So there's a bit of a clock right there. It's a bit of a timeline where, you know, there's other, obviously there's other delivery services like, you know, just like MJ, but overall, the pipeline, the delivery system, you want to be able to have that locked in place. Because once legalization comes in, obviously some major players are going to want to integrate cannabis into their business model.
Yeah, I'll sort of take that in 3 points. One, sure. People are making big news out of it. I think it's a little, you know, what's he going to say? If you tell the CEO of the largest transportation delivery company in the world, if cannabis was federally legal, would you look at it? And he says, yes, once it's legal, we would look at it. Of course he's going to say that. Like, well, what else is he going to say? Two, I think that there would be serious implications for both the industry as well as for Uber.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is it is not like delivering any other product. The security, the worker classification, and the measures that have to be in place to deliver cannabis is huge. And the reason that it's so important is because it is critical that in this industry you have inventory control. You know where inventory is, you don't lose inventory, you're able to track it and know where it is at all times so that you don't have weed getting out into the illicit market. If I'm Uber and I go into cannabis delivery, I have two options. I can either let other operators use my tools and services, which is probably the way they'd have to go, or B, I'd have to operate some sort of courier model where I classify drivers as W-2 employees. Which is the law on cannabis, and then they are employees of the licenses they are delivering from. I don't see a world in which Uber starts to classify drivers as W-2 employees for some types of deliveries and then 1099 contractors for other types of deliveries. I think that would get very muddy and continually sort of perpetuate them down this losing battle of worker classification for their larger business. Two, I don't know if you order from Postmates or DoorDash or Uber Eats, but I do, and most people I know do, and I would say probably 1 out of 10 times the driver just takes your food. If you were a regulator and you are genuinely concerned about inventory control, there is no world in which you should allow swarms of independent contractors or even a company that doesn't have much control over its drive force to deliver this product. If they're going to steal a $8 Chipotle burrito, what are they going to do with an average $80, $85 cart size ticket of cannabis? I think that if Uber got into cannabis from a policy perspective, and they have incredible lobbyists and we'll try and push on this, but I think from a policy perspective, you will see more weed go missing than you've ever seen before.
And I think what would happen is they couldn't do it themselves. They would need to acquire one of the companies. I would think one of the companies in California, they would offer a check. They could say to you, hey, Chris, here you go. We want to buy your company out. We want to take your services. We want to integrate. That would be the way they'd have to go if they were going to do it anyway.
I think so. There is so much more complexity. Have being in an industry where I've delivered food and alcohol and cannabis, I can tell you that cannabis is by far the most complex, has the most regulatory compliance. You know, you have physical tracker. You can't just be the phone, the physical tracker in every driver's vehicle, locked cases of product, the specific types of vehicles that have to be used. You know, the BCC or any bureau should be able to call the license owner at any time and say, where is all your product? And you can see it on the map. All these types of things that go into it, plus security. If Uber Eats or DoorDash or Postmates came into cannabis delivery, like I said before, I think from a public policy perspective, it would undo so much of what has been done to help the industry safely transition into the legal market.
Agreed. And again, this is so far down the line, but the fact that the Uber CEO decided to make the comments to put a spotlight on cannabis delivery is important.
It's big news.
And it's, yep, it's newsworthy at the least. And I thought it was good. And I'm glad we had a chance to ask you that question. We're going to go ahead and move along into some more questions for you. I want to go ahead and ask more about a few things when it comes to some comments you made about, I'm just going to just tease everybody with this real quick comment. If you're in alcohol, you're not talking about cannabis, then you're not thinking about the future. I want to talk about that. A few other things I want to bring up. I'm going to go ahead and ask you all about this coming up after a short break. I'm here with the CEO of MJ, E-M-J-A-Y. And if you want to learn more, take a look at their website, heymj.com, heymjay.com. Learn more about the company as we go to commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Elevate your everyday with that Shuggies feeling, with the sweet taste of Shuggies. Add a cup of Shuggies to your morning coffee. Ah, how sweet it is. Shuggies infuses cannabis and cane sugar to make it the perfect sweetener with benefits. Make your happy hour happier with a dunk of Shuggies in your drink. Order your Shuggies now at shoggies.com or find it in dispensaries throughout California. Whenever you crave a little sweet, pick up Shuggies, the sweet, sweet take anywhere treat.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
I'm here with Chris Vaughn, CEO of MJ, here on Blunt Business. You told THC.net, and before the break, I mentioned this quote. I'm going to finish the whole quote. I only gave a piece of it. If you're an alcohol, quote, and you're not talking about cannabis, then you are not thinking about the future. And if you are in cannabis, and you aren't thinking about the alcohol consumer or big alcohol, then you aren't thinking about the future either. I want you to go ahead and follow up on that point and add a little more to your point there.
Sure. I mean, it's a big reason why we've put together two companies, one that addresses the alcohol consumer, one that addresses the cannabis consumer, under one roof, so that we can be, at least today, the only company in the world that watches cross-industry buying behavior. Mm-hmm. And almost every conversation I have with big alcohol today, there is an element of them focused on cannabis. You saw this a couple of years ago with Constellation writing a decent sized check into the industry. A lot of the alcohol companies are investing in cannabis in Canada or other countries. They are gearing up and getting ready to go for when federal legalization happens. And they are laser focused on what it means for their existing consumer base. I think it's no secret that there is a huge trend in alcohol with the younger generations to drink less or to look for lower alcohol content products or to look for alternative products. And I can tell you definitively from what we see is there is a move in people that maybe typically drink beer, wine, spirits, that when they start trying particular cannabis products, that the sale or their wallet starts to balance the two industries. My consumption of wine or beer or spirits does start to go down a bit as I experience and get to know more and more cannabis products. And so I think if you're in big alcohol and you address a 21 plus year old market of vice products, and you aren't thinking about, you know, a multi tens of billions of dollar industry coming online in the country, then you will be left behind. I think at the same time, if you're in cannabis, you know, there's a lot of consumers out there that are just all in cannabis, right? Like I don't even drink. I just use cannabis products. But the majority of the market is probably people that use some form of alcohol product and then are transferring in or thinking about transferring in. This is why I'm really excited about categories like beverage, cannabis beverage, which today is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of sales. But we're starting to see people come into cannabis where the only cannabis product they use is a cannabis beverage.
Right.
And so it's an interesting space where if you're in cannabis and you, a lot of people talk about the wine consumer and cannabis is kind of similar and all this stuff. I think if you saw some of the data that we actually have on how it affects buying behavior, big alcohol and big cannabis for that matter, should be very interested. And I think understanding the customer on one side is only going to help you address their needs on the other side. And then the last point that I would say on that is, you know, obviously when federal legalization happens, those will be the companies that you are dealing with, right? Like big alcohol, big tobacco, in some ways, big pharma, all are looking at this industry and are coming in. So you better get very familiar with how they think about the world.
I want to ask you about that right there. You actually just segued perfectly to my next point. So there's a report from Bloomberg that I've been bringing on this show since February. I've been hampering on this. And I said to myself, you know, when I look at where legalization is right now with a new presidential administration that's been in for over 100 days as we record, and knowing that legalization now by a number of Senate Democrats, they're trying to go and get a legalization bill put up to be passed. It's all being talked about. Safe Banking Act is also on the table. So lobbying is important more than ever, and it just can't be talk. It has to be some money being involved. So last year, according to a story from Open Secrets, $4 million was spent on marijuana lobbying compared to $27 million spent by tobacco lobbyists, $30 million from the beer, wine, and liquor industry. And just to give you a heads up, folks, coming up on a future episode of Blunt Business, I've been talking about a new cannabis coalition made up of a wide variety of national corporations, including tobacco and alcohol firms, launched with the purpose of influencing policy and potentially shaping first federal cannabis regulations. And that guest will be Andrew Friedman, Executive Director for the Coalition for Cannabis Policy Education Regulation, also Colorado's first former cannabis czar. He'll be on an upcoming episode. And from my understanding, it's not necessarily a lobbying firm, but we're going to get a clarification with Andrew. It'll be a couple episodes down from this one here with Chris, so keep an ear out for that. Now, in that coalition, the reason I bring it up, it is, again, tied together with tobacco and alcohol firms. You have Beer Behemoth's Constellation Brands, which produces Corona and Modelo beers, Molson Coors Beverage Company, two national convenience store associations, the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, and the Brinks Company. So, as you said, alcohol and tobacco were going to come into play. But now a coalition like this, they're all tag teaming together in a united front to get cannabis passed. So what are your thoughts about the new alliance? And do you feel like the cannabis industry has any cause for concern based on your experience?
Good question. I mean, yes, lobbying will come into the space in a way that the cannabis industry has not seen before.
It's funny that Tommy Chong, I interviewed a few weeks back, he wasn't surprised. He actually just thought, you know, if it's going to get past the finish line this way, not in his words, but paraphrasing, that was the idea, is that, you know, cannabis was never going to be going across this finish line pure. There was always going to be some help with it. And, you know, some corporatization, some other factors were going to come in. People that wanted to be a part of the industry, once they knew it was legalizing or at the point of legalizing, they were going to jump in at the right time.
Smart man. I mean, it's true. I think if you want to get it fully there, you're in some ways going to need some help. And why not have help from some of the biggest, you know, multinational conglomerates that have a long history in lobbying in the country? On the other side of it, to your point, is whose interests will they lobby for? You know, I think this industry has yet to see real money. And what I mean by that is, you know, when Constellation wrote this multi-billion dollar check into the space, it basically was a kingmaker, right? Yeah. And everyone looked at it and went, oh my goodness, that's the biggest cannabis company in the world. And oh my goodness, look at all that money. That's not that much money. You know, Constellation has bought a handful of like wine SKUs for that same amount of money. Mm. So if you think about it, those dollars proportionate and even like M&A activity and alcohol, that wasn't that, I mean, it's a meaning, anytime you're writing a check of that size, it's meaningful, but it wasn't as crazy as everybody thought. And if you think people should think of how that's going to transfer into lobbying efforts. Yeah, of course. You know, these guys have the means and the ability and the history. It's not just, you know, someone comes with a big checkbook, the history of being able to successfully lobby for their interests or initiatives and can do it very well. And absolutely, if an industry is going to become federally legal and come online in the vice categories, then the largest vice players in the world are going to make sure that they somewhat control that conversation and have a big seat at the table.
And why wouldn't they?
And to your point, I think it's a double-edged sword. It's on the one hand, I think the industry needs it. They need the help to get it fully there. On the other hand, I have full faith that the alcohol and tobacco lobbies will act in their own best interests and do it very well.
But I mean, if you want to go and get across the finish line, the only way you're going to get the politicians to play ball is if there's money in their hand. I know there are a lot of organizations that so well intentioned, a lot of good organizations. I don't want to make mention, but it's a lot of talk. And unfortunately, you got to put money out there to make politicians pay attention. There's no other way around it. I just don't see another option. So with this coming in, Mike, I always keep just trying to raise the flag here and say, listen, folks, you need to pay attention to the fact that, just like Tommy said, just like Chris, you're reiterating more or less the same idea. It's expected. Why wouldn't they jump into the space? They have the money to come in. I don't know yet what CPAIR is doing as I record this program, the guest I'm going to bring on. I'm going to learn about it. I'm going to, because this is, again, the association makes me think money lobby. This is a cash output. I don't know if it is or not. I want to find out. And so I want to give the platform before I say anything other than that. But for me right now, I want to make a call attention to the fact that if you want diversity, equity, inclusion, if you want people that were incarcerated to have second chances, if you want all these great programs to be embedded and included into a legalization plan that gets passed, you need to make sure you contact all these companies or contact any of these companies that are going to get involved. If it's alcohol or tobacco, you need to jump in and get a seat at the table. There must be voices for the voices. You have to budge your way in, get yourself in there. There has to be influence. You just can't sit back and let these folks just come right in and get the passage. So there has to be some point where there has to be some chance to go ahead and mediate, to put together all the ideas together.
And I think you touched on a big one, which is, you know, a lot of those guys are coming from an industry that doesn't necessarily have the same historical criminal justice issues that this one does. And so it may be loosely on their minds, but probably not the forefront of their minds the way that it is to cannabis operators today. So that's a big one that people have to push for and make sure it's on the agenda. The way that I see it going, I think that having them help move the industry forward could be a good thing. Where I see it potentially being, I wouldn't say damaging, I would just say would end up with huge and radical changes to how the market operates today, is if what I watch closely is two things. One, the alcohol industry operates what's called a three-tiered system, which means you can only be a brand or a distributor or a retailer, with the exception of the wine industry. That is not how some of these companies operate in other countries, like in Brazil or in China. They are more of a vertical operator. And it's one of the big reasons why I was so fascinated about cannabis was when the regulations were coming down, it was, oh my goodness, you could be a vertical operator, which is how it should be. Now, in alcohol, the distributors, Southern Glaziers and others, have a tremendous amount of influence, because everything has to go through them, right? They pushed early legalization days in Nevada, if you remember, for a bill that said cannabis had to go through distribution, and to be a distributor or have a distribution license, you formerly had to be an alcohol distributor. The issue was that bill passed, and then none of the alcohol distributors actually then applied for licenses because they were worried it would mess up their business. But one area that would concern me is a lot of where cannabis, I think, gets a lot of the controls in place. You're in Florida. Like if you look at Trulieve, you know, you can only sell products that you grow yourself. In California, a little bit different, but a lot of the things that are helping move the industry forward, again, it comes back to inventory control and making sure the product doesn't go out into the illicit market. And I think that vertical operators help a lot with inventory control. I think that if big alcohol and big tobacco push for a three-tier type of model, where all of a sudden you're ripping out the distribution component, or you can only be a brand or retailer, some of these things get separated, that could be extremely detrimental to some of the current operators, and would forever shape the industry in a sort of a very different path. So that's one thing that I watch out for and listening to very closely.
That's an interesting concept.
The other is retail. Uh-huh. So obviously, you know, there's two players in that council that you mentioned. I don't know who they are, but if you are in big convenience retail, or you run big alcohol retail, you 100% should be lobbying for having cannabis sold at your retail locations.
Right. And
that is really interesting. You know, if I'm Circle K and I have thousands and thousands and thousands of stores around, so they're going to push for, why can't I sell cannabis? Or why can't I sell maybe low THC thresholds of cannabis? Yeah. And I think that if that successfully happened, you would see overnight, you would see the retail market across the country in cannabis change dramatically. And that's why I think we have at MJ, a big point of differentiation is this digital first approach to retail, because delivery in this category is very hard. Most of the convenience players can't figure out delivery of just food and regular goods. It's a difficult thing to do, let alone doing it in cannabis. And so the way that we operate store locations is, you know, the stores do very well on their own, but over 70-75% of the volume at our locations is done via delivery. And so I think what we're trying to build is, I'm conscious of the fact that big retail will lobby and lobby hard for allowing cannabis to be sold in their stores, not only today's dispensaries. And I think if that's successful, one of the most defensible models out there is one that has a strong focus on delivery.
The fact that you have a high demand, high ticket item that would do very well, and also cut away from the extra dispensary market is on top of that. So convenience. And this is where you are answering the call of convenience with MJ. So these are the things this is a great conversation to have, to put this all out into the environment, so that all of you that are business owners, entrepreneurs, C-level executives, Fortune 1000, whatever, all of you coming into the space, all of you looking to come into the space, paying attention to this. This is important material we talked about right here. I want to ask you about one more thing before we're going to wrap things up with Chris Vaughn here, CEO of MJ here on Blunt Business. And Chris, I want to ask you about the issue of the New York market. We talked about it a little bit more, and also follow up on something you said at the start of the show about where people want to come buy if they want to brick and mortar versus delivery driven businesses. We're going to talk about that after a short break. And again, website is heyemjay.com. Take a look at that while we go to break. We'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business. Hey, take a look at this. They're selling smart pots.
They have pot that can make you smart? Where is it?
Not that kind of pot. Smart pots are the best aeration container to grow your plants. Check this out. This is the original fabric container for faster producing, healthier plants. They're made with a superior fabric that delivers high yields. Plus, smart pots are reusable and sustainable, so you can use them over and over again, no matter if you use them indoor or outdoor.
That's very smart, but how good are they for the environment?
Smart pots are BPA-free and lead-free, so you'll always be able to ensure a pure, clean grow, and they're 100% made in the U.S. Over 28 million smart pots have already been sold, so it seems like a smart investment.
Look for smart pots in close to 2,000 garden centers throughout North America and ask for the original fabric container. Find a store near you or order yours online at smartpots.com.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
We're in the home stretch with Chris Vaughn, CEO of MJ, EMJAY, here on Blunt Business. So I noticed you've been quoted in a couple different places. One place was Ad Age. They described the recent passage of New York legalization as, quote, the largest cannabis market in the world and the 15th U.S. state to legalize adult use marijuana. Then I hit their paywall, so couldn't go ahead and find anything there. Then I saw some comments you made to the New York Daily News. You said the business model for cannabis distribution is a lot different than it was for alcohol starting out. Brick-and-mortar distribution stores aren't likely to thrive in a delivery-driven business. Quote, you said, how do people shop today? Online via delivery. People like convenience. And I've already asked this question before, but it's really a continuation of what you said before the break, that, first of all, New York, I said before, Consensus Strategies had a survey, 600-plus respondents, that I think they would take the approach of seeing more delivery-driven as opposed to more brick-and-mortar distribution for cannabis. And in a place like New York, would that follow along in other states? Do you think that's a model that needs to be adopted more? Do you feel like we might need to see where less physical stores are out there? And if so, the other thing I would come back with is, what about the chance for bud tenders to go ahead and be able to properly, not prescribe, but recommend, or to be able to go and let other strains or other, tinctures or other products be showcased, to lose the display portion for a cannabis business to only go delivery driven? I mean, how do you find that balance? Where's the balance needs to be? Where does that balance need to be going forward?
Good question. So on that last point, I mean, we operate an omni-channel business for a reason. And we see different purchases from the same customer when they come to the store versus when they order online. And that may be things like, if I'm going to spend $80 on Alien Labs, that's the type of purchase I want to come in. I want to talk to the bud tender, see flower, smell flower, whatever it may be, and purchase that product. But maybe my follow-on product is, a lower price point, inexpensive or valued brand weed, and I'll just have that delivered. And so we believe in offering both the experiences to the customer. When it comes to New York, I think it's pretty simple. New York is the biggest delivery market in the country, in any industry. Yeah. It is how people shop in the city, whether it's pizza or clothes or food or convenience or anything. So if you look at cannabis in New York, it is also probably the biggest cannabis delivery market in the country today. It's how people buy weed in New York. There aren't tons and tons and tons of trap shops everywhere. The primary mechanism for buying cannabis in New York is delivery. So if you are a state or a major city that seriously wants to make an illegal industry legal, the place that you have to start is with the customer. Who are the customers? How do they buy? And how will they buy going forward? And I don't think states are thinking along those lines. They got a lot of voices in their head. They got a lot of people talking about this, that, the other. The dispensary model is kind of, comes from the industry. So they kind of go that route. But New York is not going to take an illicit market and make it legal by putting shops around the city. I mean, were they going to put up thousands of shops throughout Manhattan? Like, no way. So if you're not going to do that, and you know that the illegal delivery market in New York is huge, how are you going to get people buying weed legally? You have to introduce highly competitive delivery regulations that allows professional delivery operators to run a real competitive offering to the illicit market. And if you don't allow a truly competitive legal structure, then you're never going to get rid of the illicit market.
Yeah,
just be real about it. So I think it's a big move in the right direction. I think it's all the eastern states are sort of falling one after the other, but I think any major delivery market today, where whether it's shoes or clothes or food or otherwise, if in cannabis they don't introduce competitive delivery laws for real operators to come in and do it at scale, then they're not serious about legalization. You're just going to continue to have a massive illicit weed delivery market. So that's how I think about New York. I think that if they roll out the program thoughtfully, and allow for a competitive experience for the customer, then they'll have a good chance at legalizing the market. But if they don't, and they don't think about the customer first, they're never going
to
get there.
No, you have to be conscious of the illicit market. And, I mean, California at least had made a conscious effort. I mean, they're trying to crack down. They have their Bureau of Cannabis Control. They're trying to put enforcement in place. Illinois in the same way. But you want to keep the prices down. You want to make everything competitive. Because also the other thing, too, is the pricing that you have to go and be able to do deliveries. I mean, we already see how any other traditional, either rideshare or other delivery products, the service fees are already putting on top. You know, the service fees are going to come with it comes with the territory. But then the price up, because of the illicit market, having to put your prices up higher to go ahead and make up for the illicit market, you're pricing yourself out altogether and forcing the illicit market to go ahead and take its toll.
It's one of the biggest reasons why we chose to be a license holder and a vertical operator. Is I think that if you're going to successfully run delivery operations to the customer in this space, it has to be as competitive with the illicit market as possible. And so, you know, some of these delivery services, to your point, if I'm ordering, you know, Chipotle from Postmates, that $8 burrito magically becomes $16. Delivery fees, service fees, et cetera, et cetera. On MJ, because we own the product, our margin comes from the sale of the product, not from the delivery. So we allow delivery services in California of a $75 order minimum, $100 order minimum. Our order minimum is $25.
Wow.
We have no delivery fee, and it's the same price delivered to you than if you came to one of our stores. And we intentionally undercut most of our competitors' pricing. So we are cheaper than Ease. We're cheaper than MedMen. We're cheaper than a lot of the other top stores in town. We look at their pricing and intentionally keep our prices under those thresholds. And we're cheaper delivered to you. So it is less expensive to have most of your favorite products delivered to your door than if you got up and drove to a MedMen in LA today.
Wow. Something else. And, you know, when you look at the fact that you had MJ for so long, it was based in Los Angeles, second largest market, and having the track record of how everything's worked out with what you're doing at MJ, you know, how good of an opportunity, what are maybe like one or two crucial things they need to do in New York in order for it to be as effective as it is in California?
One of the biggest pieces of regulation in California that's helpful for delivery is if you're not going to have tons of licensed depots or retail locations, they intelligently made it so that drivers could carry up to $3,000 worth of product locked in their vehicle. Up to $5,000 if it's scheduled. So as long as a driver gets an order, as long as there is an order to start the day, that driver can head out on a delivery route with up to $3,000 of product in a locked compartment in the vehicle. And then as long as orders continually come in for those drivers, they can go from point to point to point to point to point.
Right.
So what it enables us to do is from a single delivery hub, you know, let's say we open at 9 a.m. by 9:30 or 10 a.m., we may have effectively 100 mobile dispensaries all over the city, being these drivers with product in the vehicles. And that is this is what I'm talking about with New York. That is an extremely competitive set of rules that allows a service like us to thrive and do well and make money on an order at the end of the day. Compare that to like Massachusetts, where you can't have product in the car unless it's all pre-ordered. So you can only do scheduled delivery. You don't just have one delivery driver, you have to have two. Okay, so whatever your hourly cost of a driver is, your delivery cost just doubled. Mm-hmm. They have to have body cameras, they have to have specific type of vehicles that you own. They made the cost of delivery so high that it is not really competitive compared with someone just goes to the store. So it's different in every state, but I think that California looked at the customer, recognized that illicit delivery is huge, said, how do we introduce a set of rules that allows legal operators to be highly competitive? And they listened. They listened to the industry, and they did that. And that's why cannabis delivery in California is big, big business.
Chris, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to us today. This is really great conversation. So a whole lot brought out there, and I hope people will go ahead and pay attention to this. The delivery side, it needs to be considered. And obviously, with your experience in the alcohol and beverage industry, we want to keep an eye on. And I definitely want to keep the conversation going with you. Hopefully, bring you back. Not on, maybe on this show. I might have another show I want to bring you on here on Cannabis Radio that I'll follow back up with you on. But this was pretty important to talk about. Chris, thanks again for making time to join us again. Website is heyemjay.com. And real quickly, let people know what they can find, if they, you know, where they can go ahead and get MJ to deliver cannabis in their area and best way to do it.
Heyemjay.com. We carry a large selection of products, on average over 750 SKUs. We got some of the best pricing in the city delivered to you, or you can come visit one of our stores. We cover broader Los Angeles as well as all of San Diego and surrounding areas. And we're continuing to expand quickly this year. You'll see us in Northern California. You'll see us in surrounding cities around LA. So we're excited for the year ahead.
All right. Thank you again for making time. Thank you, listeners, for listening in, as always, like you do. We'll talk to you next time. The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.